So thank you for the invitation for speaking. So what I want to talk about today, I'm not fully aware of what kind of background knowledge I can assume about the audience. But if you're more physically minded, whenever I say Foucault categories, I mean this is the mathematical thing that I think should pop out when you talk about the A model with open strings. And so what I wanted to talk about today was something that fits into a big cultural goal that I think a lot of symplectic geometers have had, which is to pursue some notion of a topological Foucault category. So what do I mean by this? So usually, what is a Foucault category? Usually the input to defining a Foucault category is some sort of symplectic manifold capital M with a symplectic form lowercase omega. So of course, omega is a two form, which is non-degenerate. And capital M here is an even dimensional manifold of dimension 2n. And out of this data, I'm supposed to be able to construct an A infinity category called the Foucault category of M associated to omega. Of course, there's a lot of conditions about what kind of category this is, whether it's Z mod NZ graded, et cetera, whether it's even a category or a curved object. But roughly, it's supposed to be some invariant of this symplectic manifold, a categorical invariant. And the definition of this Foucault category involves PDEs. So roughly the kinds of PDEs that it involves is you have to choose some sort of complex structure on capital M that's compatible with the symplectic form in some sense. And you need to be able to count solutions to PDEs that are holomorphic curve equations for that complex structure. Okay, so this is usually the way in which Foucault categories are defined. So what is this cultural goal that I'm talking about a topological Foucault category? Well, the word topological is supposed to connote two different associations. So what do I mean by topological? So first, can I define something that can recover the Foucault category without PDEs? And specifically, without the PDEs of holomorphic curve equations. Okay. Why would you want to do something like this? Well, I guess there's two directions you could look at it. Classically, somehow, having to set up all the analytical details for the Foucault category, I think, has been an incredible bottleneck, both culturally and in terms of being able to access the literature. So if you can construct some version of the Foucault category or some way to recover the Foucault category without using these PDEs, that's a big cultural victory for mathematics. And second, what do I mean by what's another association? You can enrich the Foucault category. So traditionally, you can think of it as linear over some Novikov ring. And in the best cases, maybe it's even linear over the integers. So it's some category you can think of as being enriched over chain complexes over the integers, so over greater abelian groups with a differential. Over a more general kind of ring. So it's hard to think of a ring that's more general than the integers, because every unital ring is an algebra over the integers by definition. But of course, if you're a stable homotopy theorist, which I think very few people in this room are, there's an even better base ring than the integers. So specifically, what are called ring spectra in the sense of stable homotopy theory. So my claim is, so for instance, there's a lot of problems in number theory that run into the ground because there's no base ring deeper than the integers. A lot of intersection theory arguments that you'd like to make by tensoring the integers with itself over some other base ring, you can't always make that go through because there's no deeper base ring than the integers. The claim is once you generalize the world of spectra and you become a stable homotopy theorist, there's an even deeper base ring called the sphere spectrum, where tensoring Z over the sphere spectrum with itself can recover a lot of exciting new number theoretic statements. And this is related to a lot of the work that people like Peter Schulze and Bott are doing recently. But I wanted to motivate number two a little bit because I'm mindful of the fact that not everybody knows what ring spectra are. So I wanted to give some notion of what I mean by a ring that's richer than Z. So I'm going to begin with an example. Okay, so if you've been completely tuned out, you can tune in again. None of this will be required for the example. So I want to consider the following simplicial complex. So if you know what the term means, you can also, it's actually more rigorously a simplicial set. But I'm just going to build for you a space built out of edges, vertices, edges, two simplices, and so forth. Okay, so I'm going to name this complex Cobb frame. Cobb stands for cobordism, FR stands for framed. What are the zero simplices? So the zero simplices of this simplicial complex are compact zero-dimensional manifolds with a choice of orientation. Okay, so that's what the set of zero simplices is in bijection with. If you're worried about whether this is actually a set, you can think of it as zero-dimensional manifolds that are compact with an embedding into R infinity, and that's a set. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What's an orientation on zero dimensional?
Just a choice of plus or minus.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Because if you take the top exterior power of the zero vector bundle, it's the trivial line bundle.
Okay, that sounds right. Is this like zero
factorial? Yeah, zero factorial is one, if you like. Yeah. Okay. I just categorified that.
That's right.
Okay. What are the one simplices? These are compact one-dimensional manifolds, possibly with boundary, with a continuous map. So if I have a one-dimensional manifold capital X, I want to equip it with a continuous map to the one simplex. So if you like, you can just think of this as the closed unit interval from 0 to 1. Which collars capital X along the boundary. So I'm just draw a cartoon of the kind of thing that I have in mind. So here's an example of a one manifold, possibly with boundary. Okay, so here's my capital X. And I have a map down to the one simplex. So these dots indicate the boundary of capital X. And I can take a map down to the one simplex, the closed interval 0 to 1, such that the boundary of capital X ends up exactly at the boundary of the one simplex 0 to 1. Okay. And so in what sense is this a one simplex? Well, if I look at the boundary of this closed interval, what lies above it is a zero manifold. Okay, so I can forget either to the zeroth boundary or the oneth boundary of the closed interval, and I get the data of zero manifolds. And so I recover zero simplices as boundaries of these one simplices. And of course, I want these one manifolds with an orientation. Okay, so that I can specify the orientations of these zero simplices. And in general, what are the n simplices? These are compact n-dimensional manifolds, capital X, together with a map down to delta n. So these manifolds possibly have corners. Together with a map down to delta n, so this is just the n simplex that collars capital X in a way analogous to this. Okay, so for instance, as an example of n equals 2, actually I'm probably going to mess this up, so I probably shouldn't try to draw it, but I can just take the 2 simplex itself. And there's a cheater's example. Okay, and I could also maybe have a copy of a hemisphere, something with boundary along this edge. Okay? So why have I taken you through this? And these are the adjective framing together with an isomorphism from the tangent bundle of X, which is n-dimensional, to the trivial vector bundle. So not every capital X admits such an isomorphism, but this is part of the data that I want to carry around with me. Okay, so now I want to ask the following question. So let's choose. a base point on this simplicial complex. So what's its base point? It's going to be a choice of zero simplex. There's a very nice zero simplex called the empty zero-dimensional manifold. Okay. And let's compute the homotopy groups of this space with respect to this base point. Okay, does anybody happen to know the answer?
I think I'm confused about what are the maps between, have you told us how to base in the degeneracy map?
Yeah, that's right. Because the map from capital X to delta N is collared,
okay.
If I want a phase map, I can just take the ith phase of delta N, and I can pull back.
So it's sort of induced from the standard.
Yeah, it's induced from, exactly. It's induced by pulling back along the standard inclusion maps. And the fact, this coloring that I'm not making precise, but you can go home and make it precise if you want, will tell you that, yes, yeah. And the degeneracy maps are a little more subtle, but. Yeah, okay, so there's two steps. So first, it turns out that with well-behaved simplicial complexes, there's actually a combinatorial way where you can try to compute its homotopy groups. In fact, a combinatorial definition. So first, my claim is that these homotopy groups are isomorphic to the following quotient. So you can take the set of all n simplices such that the boundary of the n simplex is just completely the empty manifold. In other words, you take an n-simplex that's completely colored by the empty set along its boundary. Okay, so for instance, if n equals 2, you would get some sort of compact 2 manifold with no boundary. Okay? See there? That's right, with a framing. That's why I drew a, you know, genus. That's why I drew a torus as opposed to a sphere. That's right. And you mod out. By the following relation, you look at n plus 1 simplices for which all but 2 faces of the n plus 1 simplex equal the empty manifold. Oh, sorry, so this should also be lowercase n's. Okay, so I'm claiming that, so what are the two faces? So for instance, in this example, here's the two simplex, and it might be colored by the empty manifold on the right. Here it might be colored by two copies of the circle. And an example of a two simplex will be a cobordism from this circle to this circle. Okay, and so in other words, this is precisely the relation, compact framed N manifolds, modulo cobordism. Okay, so in fact, even though I defined for you this like simplicial complex, I rigged it so that its homotopy groups are a very celebrated classical invariant from differential topology called the cobordism groups. Okay, and I know that I'm running to the edge, so I won't write too much more on this right-hand side. But there's a famous theorem due to Pontryagin and Thom which David already alluded to. David skipped the middle step of the answer, which is that these are actually the stable homotopy groups. So pi n is actually the nth stable homotopy group of spheres. Okay. In other words, if you know what the sphere spectrum is, these are the homotopy groups of the sphere spectrum. But okay, I introduced all this because I wanted to tell you about ring structures that are richer than the integers. So where's the ring structure?
Sorry, before you say that, can you say where the group structure is? So how are compact ring and manifolds group?
You can take disjoint union.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I was about to get to that. So I was supposed to give you an enriched, you know, some version of a ring. So where's some sort of ring structure? So the observation, So observation is that, so I can take the direct sum over all n of these stable homotopy groups, or of these honest homotopy groups. The observation is that this is a graded ring. Okay. So for instance, let's say that I have two elements of pi n. What is that? They're two compact n manifolds. I can take their disjoint union to get another one. So the addition corresponds to disjoint union of compact manifolds. And given a K manifold and an L manifold, I can take their direct product and I get a K plus L manifold. And so multiplication corresponds to direct product. Okay? And the claim is that this relationship, you can work it out, respects the relation called cobordism. So in fact, this is the structure of a graded ring. But of course, anybody homotopically minded knows that we've passed to an invariant of a space, and we've given an algebraic structure to that invariant. And the question is, can we lift this algebraic structure to the space itself? And the claim is you can. And this is not at all an obvious claim. Oh, and by the way, as another remark, you actually recover the integers as a zeroth bit of this group, because compact zero manifolds with an orientation modulo cobordism is just the integers. Okay. So the question is, does this ring structure lift to the space itself? And the answer is yes. I'm not going to tell you how. So first, let me just say that lifting the addition to the space itself is pretty easy. You can honestly just take disjoint unions of cobordisms and disjoint unions of compact manifolds. But it's lifting the multiplication that's incredibly difficult. So at the level of object, it's obvious. Like, you take two compact manifolds, take their direct product. But you need to be able to take direct products of simplices at all levels. So let's say that you have two edges, in other words, two cobordisms, and you take their direct product. That's something that naturally lives over a rectangle or a square. And so now, if you want to define another edge, you need to somehow choose inside of a space that lives over a square some distinguished cobordism inside there. So you can see that there's a homotopy coherence issue involved.
What does it mean,
statural
space?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. It means that it is an algebra over the E infinity operator in two different ways, one for the addition, one for the multiplication, and it satisfies a distributive property. Or if you like, if you don't like the word E infinity, you can do A infinity for starters too.
That's the space, isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so for instance, like if I were to take the based loop space of any space as composition of paths, so that renders it an algebra over the associative operator, yes. E1. And so I want to give that same structure to this in two different ways that are compatible with distribution. Okay.
So just for people who don't know the field, is there a name for this theorem or a reference, or what's the...
That's such a good question. So at the space level, I've actually never seen, I've only ever seen one proof, which is like, which I'm writing up right now, because it turns out I need a generalization of this. But one way you can see it is using a fancy version of Pontryagin-Thome's theorem, you can prove that actually this space called the space of cobordisms, this simplicial complex, is actually the infinite loop space associated to the sphere spectrum. And now you can choose your favorite model of smash product and show that the sphere spectrum has a ring structure. And this is the one induced on the infinite loop space of the sphere spectrum. Okay. So in fact, as I just said, there's a spectrum, not in the sense of representation theory or algebraic geometry, but in the sense of homotopy theory, the sphere spectrum. Whose ring structure induces one on the space. on.
Would it be impolite to ask what is
this? No, it's not impolite. Do you want a geometric answer or a algebraic answer? I'll give you the algebraic answer, because geometrically it's actually, I think it's not enlightening. So this is a bit of a detour, but yeah. So let's take the category of topological spaces with a base point. So this has pushouts, otherwise known as mapping cones, and also has pullbacks, which are otherwise known as fiber products, more or less. Okay, and there's another familiar category with such properties. I can take chain complexes over any ring R, and this also has mapping cones and fiber products. Okay. Now, there's a special property that chain complexes have that base topological spaces don't, which is, let's say that I have a map of chain complexes like this, and I take its mapping cone. So there's some induced map from capital Y to the mapping cone. Now, if I forget about capital X, my claim is I can recover both capital X and the map lowercase f just by taking the kernel of this map. Okay, so just by taking the kernel of lowercase g, I can recover capital X. And by definition of a kernel, it comes with a map to capital Y. Okay, so in fact, the kernel of g is enough data. So there's one fancy way to say this is that this is both a pushout and a pullback square. Okay, every pushout square is also a pullback square. And this is not true of topological spaces. But there's a universal thing that you can construct called the category of spectra, which again has pushouts and pullbacks, but also satisfies this pushouts equal pullbacks. So pushout squares are automatically pullback squares. And somehow universal. So any functor out of topological spaces that turns pushouts and pullback squares into squares that are both pushout and pullback has to factor through spectra. And you can prove that this has a symmetric monoidal structure. And in fact, formal considerations tell you this is actually equivalent to the category of modules for something. And it turns out it's modules of over the sphere spectrum. But what is it? OK. Yeah.
I don't want to derail
the topic. No.
And you'll be having that.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe I can just. So maybe I'll punt on that so I can actually talk about Lagrangian cobordisms and Foucault. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about this, but let me just say, yeah. So maybe here's like a better answer. So the sphere spectrum, which I'll denote by blackboard S, is the image of the zero sphere under this map. Okay. Oh, and I should say, so chain complexes has like a shift functor. You can shift the chain complex up and down. My claim is that's a formal consequence of pushouts being pullbacks. So likewise, this has a shift functor. And it turns out that the n-sphere under this universal arrow will be sent to the sphere spectrum shifted by n. So it's something that takes suspensions to shifts. OK. But anyway, so. My claim is, so in the world of spectra, so the sphere spectrum is the base ring in the category of spectra, which I claim is the same thing as the category of modules over this ring. And in fact, I claim that inside the category of spectra is a spectrum that a homotopy theorist would write Hz, where you can think of just as z. Any chain complex is an example of spectra. And in fact, this is an algebra over the sphere spectrum. OK. And so one of the questions that one can try to ask is it possible to enrich, to not just recover a Foucault category without using PDEs, but can you even do better and give a version of the Foucault category that's actually enriched over some ring spectrum that's deeper than the integers?
Why is that a strengthening of the Grossmann?
It's not a strengthening.
I mean, if you're saying that you want to find a Foucault category without PDEs, but and you also want to sort of want to reach it over the to me, it seems like those are two unrelated questions.
No, they're totally orthogonal. I mean, depending on the strategy, they might not be orthogonal, but I agree, they are two unrelated questions. The reason that I put them both in the same breath is because, you know, for some reason, when I talk to people, they use the phrase topological Foucault category, and my claim is there's two meanings to this. Like when somebody says topological Foucault category, they might be excited because you can do floor theory without PDEs, or they might be excited because you're going deeper than the integers.
So I need to do both?
Yeah. Or, like most talks about topological Foucault categories, I don't have a proof that I have done both, but I'll have a candidate that does both.
So I think about Foucault categories associated with two-dimensional topological theory.
Yeah.
Does point two meaning means doing some dimensional topological things, or still two-dimensional topological theory?
So I should say I'm not as comfortable. I don't think it's higher dimensional. I think it's still a two-dimensional field theory, like in the sense that, for instance, so for instance, if M is Calabi-Yau, you should again get a Calabi-Yau category, and you should have a 2D field theory associated to that. The question is, what does the 2D field theory take values in? And so classically, the field theory might take values in, for instance, the point might be sent to like some object in the category of categories enriched over Z or chain complexes over Z or something, but now it'll be categories enriched over spectra or whatever base ring spectrum you choose. So it's still a 2D field theory, it just has a different target. So for instance, like the kind of observables that you look at won't be invariants of chain complexes, but they'll be invariants of spectra, like homotopy groups. At least that's my understanding. If anybody wants to tag on to that, please do. Okay, so this is like some really vague, hand-wavy introduction to maybe some inkling of a notion that there's rings that are deeper than the integers. Okay, and so now for something completely different. The introduction, the pre-introduction took half an hour, but I still haven't explained what either of these really is. So let me just do a rapid introduction to Foucault categories. So part one, a rapid intro to Foucault categories. Okay, and I'm gonna do this by example because there's a construction that we can see here that I'll use later on. All right, so let's consider M to be the cotangent bundle of R. Okay, so here's a picture of capital M. And let's fix two curves, L0 and L1, inside of capital M. I will draw them like this. Okay, so L0 is like a little valley, and L1 you can think of as the zero section. And out of this pair, I'm going to construct a chain complex. So the fact that it's a chain complex, of course, I'm thinking of the Foucault categories enriched over, say, the integers. There's nothing spectral happening here. Okay, construct a cochain complex that is historically written CF upper star of L0 with L1. The C stands for chains, F stands for floor. So it's the floor cochain complex associated to these two. And how do I define it? So as an abelian group, you should usually be careful with coefficient rings, but I'm just gonna pretend I can do everything over Z without any further remarks on the analytical details. It's going to be, as an abelian group, a free abelian group generated by the intersection points of L0 and L1. So in this case, there's just two generators. And now I need to define for you a differential. And what's the differential? Well, the differential comes from playing the following game of complex analysis. D counts. Yeah, so the version that I'm doing right now doesn't have any local systems. You can have a version of local systems where, you know, you actually specify morphisms between the fibers where they intersect. You can ignore local systems. I mean, there's a version of the spectral enrichment thing with local systems as well, But
and right now you're assuming that intersections run through rows, right?
That's right, I am. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Okay. And so what does D count? So D counts maps as follows. So this is an actual game that you could play with undergraduates if you ever teach a complex analysis class. So let's look at all smooth maps from R across the closed interval to M. So here's a copy of R times the closed interval from 0 to 1, satisfying the following boundary conditions. So first, if I restrict U to R times 0, or R times 1, so just the bottom edge or the top edge, it has to have image inside of either L0 or L1. Okay? So the bottom edge has to be sent to 0, the top edge has to be sent to L1. And second, so if I take U and I fix a time S on the real line, that draws for me a curve inside of my manifold capital M. And I can ask, what is the limiting curve as S goes to plus or minus infinity? I want this to be inside the intersection of L0 and L1. So it's some strip that begins its life at negative infinity at some intersection point and ends its life at positive infinity at some other intersection point. OK, so far, how many such U are there in this particular example? There's infinitely many, because you can always perturb smooth maps. And so the third requirement is going to be the one that really restricts the degrees of freedom that you have, which is it needs to solve this PDE called being a holomorphic map. OK. All right, so now how many are there?
Two?
Zero.
Zero.
OK, why did you say zero? OK, no reason. So there's still infinitely many, but let me describe what I mean. So first, let me describe the stupidest ones. The constant map is always holomorphic. OK, so in fact, I can take the constant map to this intersection point. It satisfies all the boundary conditions, so that's a point. Likewise with this one. And now by the Riemann mapping theorem, I know that I can find a holomorphic map from the strip into this region. Okay? I use the version of the Riemann mapping theorem with boundary. So there's at least one disk with image like this. Now the point is this complex manifold called this strip has a complex automorphism by translation by R. And this del bar equation is obviously invariant under that. So whenever I find one such map, I can act by the R translation action to get another. OK, so in fact, there's infinitely many by virtue of the R action. OK, so what really decounts, so decounts more specifically the set of such U modulo the translation action. And it turns out that you can do some index theory computations to see that modulo R, there's only one such strip. And these you should consider as living in negative one-dimensional components of a moduli space. So more specifically, what's D of an intersection point? It's just the summation over all Q of the number of strips U from P to Q modulo R. So you look at the zero-dimensional component of this. And then that's the coefficient in front of the generator Q. OK. So this is a definition of the Flohr-Cochain complex for L0 and L1. OK, so in this particular example, it's a cochain complex that just has two generators, P and Q. And like I said, there's only just a single holomorphic strip. So in fact, this is an acyclic chain complex. So I've wasted your time in computing an acyclic chain complex. But if this is the first time you've seen this, this is the first live computation of an explicit example of a Flohr cochain complex. OK, so in general, the Fukaya category of M has objects. So they're usually not just some submanifold. They come with some extra structure, but I'm going to ignore that in this talk. where capital L is a Lagrangian submanifold. So if you like, it's a D brain in the A model. In mathematical terms, so the dimension of L is half the dimension of capital M, and the symplectic form vanishes there. Yeah?
So this equation is essentially the Morse law for the function, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So Witten has
del phi on the segment.
Oh, yes, there's two ways you can think about it. So one, this is the gradient trajectory.
The Morse complex for that.
Exactly. So this is a gradient trajectory for on an infinite dimensional space called the path space. Yes?
So could you possibly discretize the segment?
What does that mean?
It basically a bunch of points. And
oh, I see what you're saying.
An approximated functional way of
I see. So you're saying, like, just forget the actual path and just look at tiny, tiny collections of points on the path and define some number associated to that collection of points.
Is it possible if you put enough points, you put at some point head-light
complex? I have no idea. I have no idea.
If you didn't like the Delta equation.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Maybe that's another.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. Do you have a?
No.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. And for the purpose, okay. So in general, this is a very rough. This is very rough because I'm assuming that, like I said, there's a lot of decorations on capital L that I'm ignoring. Okay. So these are the objects of the Foucault category, and what are the morphisms between two Lagrangians? They're the complex that I just defined for you in the case that L0 and L1 are transverse. So for instance, if L0 and L1 are compact and they're transverse, this is a finitely generated chain complex. And I am not at all going to get into the details that you need to put in to define morphisms for L0 and L1 that are not transverse. If you're interested, we can talk about that later. Okay, so that's roughly what the Foucault category is. Let me just say in words that composition is not associative on the nose, but it's associative up to homotopy and higher homotopy, et cetera. And the homotopies are given, and the composition maps and the homotopies are given, again, by counting solutions to some del bar equation, where before we were counting solutions corresponding to maps out of a disk with two marked points, or if you like, with two boundary punctures. This is biholomorphic to this infinite strip. And the composition maps and the higher homotopy maps are given by counting holomorphic maps of disks with finitely many punctures on the boundary, satisfying particular boundary conditions given by your brains, given by your objects. OK, so I don't want to go too much deeper into that. OK. So I just needed to get through that so that you know what I'm talking about with Foucault categories. And now I want to actually get into some results. OK. Are there any questions so far? Well, I guess there have been plenty, actually. OK. All right. So part two, Lagrangian cobordisms. OK, so let's fix my symplectic manifold capital M. I'm going to make several claims. So claim, there exists a category, lag of M. Okay. With roughly the same objects as the Foucault category of M. And I'll explain why the adjective roughly is there. So I've specified the objects. What are the morphisms? And a morphism from L0 to L1 is given by a Lagrangian cobordism. Yeah. So what do I mean? So I'll use the capital Q to denote a cobordism because the Q sound sounds like the C sound in cobordism. So IE, it's a submanifold of M times T star R. And if you really like cobordisms, you know that you should collar your cobordisms at the end so you can compose cobordisms to get a smooth composition such that. So let me first draw a picture. So here's a picture of the cotangent bundle of R. And let me draw a picture. So there's a projection map to T star R called forget the M component. And let me draw a picture of what the projection of Q is supposed to look like here. OK, so it can do something crazy and wild on the above a compact interval of the zero section. But outside this region, it just looks like a copy of the zero section times the incoming manifold. And outside, it looks like a copy of the zero section times the outgoing manifold. OK. And so I draw this to mean the image of capital Q could look crazy once you project a T star R. In particular, Q itself could be non-compact in the cotangent directions of T star R. Let me just say this avoids. If capital Q goes down to negative infinity, and this is a technical condition that will come in later, the part of capital Q that goes off to negative infinity avoids a fixed compact region of capital M. It's going to be some compact region of capital M that in some situations is going to be God-given to you. And I'll get into this later on. You'll see where this condition comes in when I relate Lagrangian cobordisms to the Foucaille category. OK.
So you're roughly the same objects.
Yeah, so let me make that explicit now. So you can take. So let me just define a category with the exact same objects as the Foucaille category. So the objects here are just honest Lagrangians inside of M, and the morphisms are cobordisms between them. Well, whenever you have Lagrangian inside of capital M, you can turn it into a Lagrangian inside of M times T star R just by taking a direct product with, say, a cotangent fiber. Okay, and you can do the same thing for cobordisms. Yeah. And you strictly speaking, I haven't defined, but this is actually an infinity category. So if you like, you can think of it as a category that's enriched over topological spaces.
That's okay. But you haven't explained it, right?
I have not. Okay. But you asked, why the word roughly, so I want to answer roughly.
Okay.
Yeah. So really what you can do is you can construct a sequence of categories where the objects are honest Lagrangians inside of M or inside of M times T star R, and cobordisms between them are the morphisms. And I can take the increasing union of all these categories. Okay. So the union over all these guys is what I'm calling lag of M. So if you like, an object of this category is not a Lagrangian inside of M, but a Lagrangian inside of M times T star Rn for some n. And a morphism is some cobordism between them. And if L and L prime live in different dimensions, you make them live in the same direction, same dimension, by just multiplying one of them by a cotangent fiber sufficiently many times. Absolutely. There's two good reasons. So one is the classical theory of cobordism never takes place inside of some fixed manifold. It usually takes place inside some fixed manifold times R infinity, because you want room to be able to wiggle around cobordisms. So this is just the natural version. So for instance, if I took out the word cotangent bundle here, this would just be mapping M into M times R, et cetera, into M times R infinity. Okay, and mapping by a cotangent fiber is just, it's essentially just taking the conormal of the classical construction of stabilizing into R infinity. Yeah. So that's reason number one, which is we saw earlier that for some reason, the theory of cobordisms recovers interesting algebraic structures. And so that's one reason you might want to be able to milk that structure in the cobordism theory for Lagrangians. And the second reason is because once you do this, it turns out this category becomes enriched over spectra. But let me just first answer the other question you had, which is, in what sense is this an infinity category? So in lag of M, you can define a homotopy from, say, a cobordism Q to Q prime to be another cobordism from Q to Q prime. So you see, this is beginning to look a lot like the simplicial complex that I defined at the beginning. Somehow, if you think of vertices as your objects and edges as your morphisms, this is saying that I can think of a homotopy between my morphisms as another Lagrangian cobordism between Q and Q prime. Okay, and so I put a parenthesis here. You can also define higher homotopies to be given by higher dimensional cobordisms. Okay, so now let me state some results.
Yeah. Here, I mean, in the usual definition for Kanaka category, to define, I mean, things to work nicely, you need to really make the assumption that the intersection is transverse, and when it's not transverse, you have to work. So here, somehow this doesn't appear at all.
Correct. Yeah, because manifolds don't need to be transverse to start talking about cobordisms between them. So now the extra T star R direction allows you to move it however you want.
But is it obvious here that now, if you've got this sort of changes, then you forget the bridge section. Is it obvious that if you move your Lagrangian by Hamiltonian isotope, you get an isomorphic object?
Mm-hmm. There's a formal Yeah, so a Hamiltonian isotopy, you can draw what's called the graph or the suspension of the Hamiltonian isotopy. It'll be a submanifold of M times T star R, and it'll turn out to be an equivalence in the category of cobordisms. So every Hamiltonian isotopy gives rise to an equivalence without any analysis, no continuation maps or anything. Okay, so now let me just state some theorems.
So the example on the board.
This, yeah.
How do I see the diatomorphism in L1?
There? So the example on there's only one cobordism on the board, which is L1. L0 is not collared by the zero section.
No. It's object. So is that two objects? Two objects in your category, right? L0 and L1.
Uh-huh.
What could be is there any sense which they're true cobordism or not cobordism?
Say, is there a sense in?
I was just trying to get an intuition of how the...
Okay, so is there a morphism from L0 to L1?
Yes.
Okay. So now you're catching me in some adjectives that I haven't told you. So remember that I mentioned some compact region of capital M. In the case of M times T star R, let me just say that the kinds of objects that I want to consider in lag, if I cross by T star R, I want them to live over a compact region of R. So for instance, like these are morphisms in my category, but not objects. Because if I take the projection to R, they don't live over a compact. If you turn them around, then you'll get an object, but somehow there might not be a priori any relation between them. In fact, you should somehow think of those two as dual constructions somehow. Horizontals and verticals pair.
But
is there an example of a morphism of the Kai category that you can reproduce?
Yeah. Yeah, so it'll take like some time, but yeah, so my claim is like, so just as an example. So let's assume L0 and L1 are on a submanifold of capital M, and their intersection is just a single point called P. Okay, so here's a picture of L0 and L1 locally inside of capital M. Then there exists a cobordism that's colored by L0 and colored by L1, and it has one vertical offshoot. And the vertical offshoot is what's classically known as the surgery of L0 and L1 along P. It's a classical construction that out of such a situation, you can actually construct a single Lagrangian by surgering like this, by attaching a handle. And now it turns out, I'm about to construct for you a functor.
The morphisms are telling, express the morphisms in terms of how they deform the sum.
Yeah, that's right. So if I were to allow immersed things, like because there's one intersection point, this is embedded, so it's allowed in my category. But the future direction is if you allow for immersed things, somehow just doing a sequence of these will tell you that for well-behaved points, you get a morphism for every well-behaved point expressed in terms of a cobordism. And in fact, let me just say, like, so it's well known, or it was a folk theorem slash theorem, depending on whether or not you believe some of the analysis, that in the Fukaya category, this was supposed to be the mapping cone of the morphism called lowercase p.
Yes.
Okay. And my claim is, once I construct this functor for you, this will follow as a corollary. I don't know if I'll have time, but because yeah, I have 5 minutes.
A bit of a tight schedule today.
Yeah. Okay. So let me just rapid fire state some theorems, because I haven't stated any theorems. I've just told you what spectra are. I've been told that at a talk I should present my theorems first, and I'm doing the opposite. Okay, so here's the first theorem that goes back a few years. So the first theorem is, in fact, lag of m is what's called a stable infinity category. So let me tell you what this means. So without telling you the definition of such a thing, let me just tell you what some consequences are. So as a consequence, lag of m is enriched over spectra. Okay. Another consequence is that I can take the homotopy category, having the same objects where the morphism sets are just pi 0 of the spaces of morphisms. Turns out this is canonically triangulated. Okay. And it gets better. So the conjecture that we made in the same paper where we proved this theorem, and the point of this talk is to tell you some progress relating towards this conjecture, is if M is equipped with an antiderivative to its symplectic form. So you can think of this as the complement of some divisor in an algebraic variety, if you like. So if M admits an exact structure, and you remember this exact structure, and the conjecture is that this category of Lagrangian cobordisms should actually recover what's called the wrapped Fukaya category of capital M. So it's a version of the Fukaya category that I don't know of like any honest physics interpretation for the wrapping. Maybe I don't know if somebody else does, but it's a version of the Fukaya category that you can define for these kinds of non-compact symplectic manifolds.
Yeah, but if
M is compact, you will never be able to find an antiderivative to omega unless M is a point. Just for cohomology reasons, like omega needs to define a volume form, and if it's zero, then yeah, that's right.
So the category is defined without the category.
That's right. So, like I said, I've left out a bunch of adjectives. Let me just say that In the case that capital M is compact, if you don't have a theta, it's not so obvious how to define non-compact cobordisms. Like non-compact things can have very wild behavior. My claim is in the definition of this, we actually use a choice of theta to tame those cobordisms. But you're right, there's a version of this that you can still, there's some obvious taming conditions that you can choose without theta, but I don't want to claim a conjecture for that case. But let me just make this conjecture even likely to be true. On the left-hand side, you have something that's enriched over spectra. On the right-hand side, you have something that's z-linear at best. And so you need a change of coefficients. And so the claim is that there is actually a ring spectrum that we can define, but we can't compute anything about. We don't know if it's the sphere spectrum. We don't know if it's aether. We don't know what it is. But the claim is, for any example of capital M, it's linear over this ring spectrum L. And I can produce an E-infinity ring, a commutative ring map from L to the integers. So this left-hand side makes sense. And the claim is, when I change these coefficients, I'll recover the Foucaille category. So the left-hand side is a purely non-PDE definition. It satisfies both one and two of the cultural goals. And the conjecture is that I have satisfied that goal. So let me just, I know it's always dangerous when a speaker says, can I have 5 minutes? But
yeah.
I've woefully proven zero results.
You helped set your theorem, so I think that's it.
OK. So I'm just telling you the progress towards this conjecture. So here's some theorems. So there exists a functor of infinity categories from lag of m to modules over the Foucaille category of m. So these are just, this is the place where the Yoneda embedding for Fouque of m lives.
So for with theta, without theta.
Yeah, so with theta. That's right.
But there's no wrap.
Yeah, so this is not the wrapped one. It doesn't have non-compact objects. So if you like, I can put the adjective compact. That's right. Yeah. Now, on the other hand, this has non-compact objects. My claim is this functor is actually, you should think of it more as a pairing between non-compact and compact guys. There's a better functor using something called the open-closed map, where you could construct an honest functor from lag of m to the wrapped category of Foucaille of m, but I haven't worked out the analysis there. Okay, so this is somehow a construction of a pairing. So this respects mapping cones. In fact, both the left and the right-hand side are triangulated after you pass to their pi 0 and their h 0. The claim is this is an exact functor. It respects the exact triangles. And moreover, yeah, so you can tell how woefully I'm doing. This is a result from my thesis. So this is like 3 years ago. So actual more recent results, when m equals a point, which is the case that was brought up earlier, this lifts to a symmetric monoidal functor. So what's the symmetric monoidal structures? Well, if m equals a point, these are just Lagrangians in R infinity. And if I have two Lagrangians, I can take their direct product. And you might ask, what do you do on morphisms like cobordisms? That's the coherence issue that I talked about at the beginning of the talk. And on the right-hand side, when m is a point, the Foucaille category of m is just z modules. And so it has a natural tensor product called tensoring over z. And the claim is that I can make this a symmetric monoidal functor. In fact, you use the kind of techniques that prove the claim that I claimed at the beginning, which is that the space of cobordisms has an E-infinity ring structure. That's the kind of techniques. That's right. So when the M is a point, modules over the Foucaille category is Z modules. So Fouque of M, when M is a point, has two objects called a point and an empty manifold. If you compute the morphisms between them, you just get trivial morphisms except for the point, which has endomorphisms called Z. And so when you look at modules over that, the only thing that you remember is the action of Z, and you get Z modules. OK, so that's the symmetric monoidal functor. And so as a corollary, so the unit of the symmetric monoidal structure for direct product is a point. And the unit for the symmetric monoidal structure here is z, where endomorphisms of z is, of course, just z. Whenever you have a symmetric monoidal functor between categories, this induces a commutative algebra map of the units. So there exists an E infinity commutative ring map from this ring spectrum, which is the script L that I was talking about in the conjecture, to the integers. And so so let me just say, this is somehow the first steps into showing that the conjecture even makes sense on the left-hand side. Okay, and there's more I wanted to say, but I will stop there. Thank you.
Do you have any idea how surjective this functor is? I mean, you should be able to see every object of the rock, and we can see lots of the morphisms.
Yeah, so I mean, if I could see all the... So let me just say that I know that if I pass the immersed cobordisms, I certainly have a better shot at seeing all the morphisms just by using this mapping cone construction that I talked about. Mm-hmm. But that's also dangerous because the analysis for immersed things is way harder. And so I don't know yet to what extent I can see all the morphisms. Yeah, in fact, I have a really roundabout way of trying to prove that, which is just proving the conjecture itself using a local to global philosophy. Like both the left and the right hand side should be cosheaves on the skeleton. And if I can prove it for points, and if I can prove it for singularities, like the basic singularity types, and I prove that both sides are a cosheave, then somehow I just need to prove it on the local pieces.
Can I talk to you? To make these maps to this functor. For example, these Qs look like boundary conditions for some PDEs. I mean, I could test instead of the strict one, like a half a strict, I could put Q, L, L.
Yeah, so let me just tell you. So I haven't told you what the functor is. The functor is very easy. Let's just say that I have some cobordism. So here's a picture of a cobordism. And let's say that I have some test object. I can cross x by the curve that I drew at the beginning of the talk. And I can compute the floor complex between x times gamma, which is something that lives above this curve. It's this curve in R2. It's this thing that looks like a canyon. So x times gamma is a Lagrangian in n times t star r. And so is capital Q. So I can compute their floor complex. And this has three kinds of disks. You see, I had everything all planned out until I ran out of time. And so there's three kinds of disks appearing in the floor complex. The degenerate disks compute exactly the differentials for the floor complex of x with L0 and x with L1. And then counting these disks amounts to counting a linear map between these two. So this is how, from a cobordism, you produce a natural transformation of representable functors. So you're right. I mean, these capital Qs are exactly serving as boundary conditions for the holomorphic strip equation. And that's how I produce the map. I mean, if I'm going to produce a map from something without PDEs to something with PDEs, I have to use PDEs.
That was also you could put things as a little strip rectangle, where you put L0 times. I mean, I can have L0 times R, L0 at 1 times R, Q, and a point infinity on a half strip.
Uh-huh.
Counting solutions there might give the map from Q to actual morphism. The map became morphism.
Yeah, that's exactly. The functor that I claimed I couldn't work out the analysis for, more or less. It's a little bit different, but what you can instead do is just, if you just ignore L0 and L1, and just out of the cobordism, you want to produce morphisms in the Foucault category. So just given a cobordism from L0 to L1, rather, now you want to produce some sort of count of intersection points between L0 and L1. My claim is you can embed T star R into T star S1. And you can look at something called an open closed map, which is essentially computing maps from a disk with one boundary marked point and one boundary puncture, where the boundary puncture goes off to infinity, some boundary at infinity of this manifold, and where this is a thing that has to get sent to L0 intersect L1, and everything else lives over Q. And my claim is this should be the functor that doesn't just land in modules, but lands in the honest wrapped Foucault category. So this is some cobordism version of the open closed map. Right. I have no idea how this makes homological mirror symmetry easier.
Well, I mean, are there some, infinity categories of clear achieved or something that you can compare?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, somehow a much easier thing to compare this to would be not the Foucault category, but maybe constructible sheaves on M times T star R or something. Like you'd expect cobordisms to give rise to, I embarrassingly haven't thought enough about that. This is something that many people have suggested to me, which is instead of comparing to the Foucault category, why not compare to some sheaves version of the Foucault category? Oh, on the B side, right. So I'll put it this way: I don't know what the mirror to a cobordism is, because when you talk about mirror symmetry for things like M times T star R, I think it's actually pretty subtle to nail down what you mean by the mirror of T star R. Like you know what it is as a category; it's Z modules, but you want an actual geometric description of the mirror. Because you'd want to be able to produce from every Lagrangian cobordism some morphism between sheaves on the mirror.
I thought this T star R just came up in stabilization. I mean, you have some now, you start with some cyclic manifold, right?
Yeah, it comes up in two ways. One is to define the morphisms, and the other is to define the stabilization. And if I want to do mirror symmetry, I need to know where morphisms are sent on the mirror. And I don't know how to translate a Lagrangian in M times T star R into a morphism of sheaves on the mirror. And to do that, I think what I would really like to do is understand what I really mean by the mirror to M times T star R, which I claim is subtle. I think for instance, the correct mirror to T star R should be something S1 equivariant matrix factorizations on the one-dimensional Mohr singularity. So I think this is subtle. I don't know how to do that on the mirror side. Yeah, so there's right, so there's two things you could mean by that. So one is so I need to think a little bit more about, so there's two things you could mean by that. So the projection map from M times T star R to T star R already puts you in some weird setting of a Foucault-Seidel category where there's no singularities, right? The projection map from M times T star to T star is a very dumb Lefschetz vibration. It's just a vibration. I know that there's work of Biron and Cornea that says, by realizing that cobordisms look like something that live in the total space of some Lefschetz vibration, you can actually say something about the Foucault-Seidel category of M. I haven't read that paper.
Give us all potential on M, maybe you can put the quadratics all potential on this star.
I see. Right.
It's clear that that's not going to change the category.
Right. I guess another thing I should say is, I haven't thought through the details, but for instance, even in the the Vicayak Seidel category for M times T star R. One normally doesn't allow for objects as general as a general cobordism. Like, you normally allow for objects that are colored by curves towards infinity in the Vicayak Seidel category.
But they need to go to infinity in a place where the sole potential goes to infinity.
Oh, you're saying it doesn't need to be colored by curves? But no, I thought that's how you like even get the thimble picture was by parallel transporting along the curves. Or you probably know this more. What? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't realize that I could just. Okay.
But even so, right here, this kind of practical potential would allow you to. Plus minus infinity of the real axis.
Yeah.
So this asymptotic end, these asymptotic ends would be okay.
Yeah.
And the other asymptotic ends might define if this whole potential
sends them to. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I suppose we should wrap back here again.